Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies, this is Pardes from Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Vayera. Thanks for tuning into this podcast series, and I suggest that you check out all of our online offerings available at our special website, elmad.pardes.org. That's elmad.pardes.org. This week, Vayera with Rabbi Howard Marcos. Rabbi Howard Marcos is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Howard Marcos.
Thank you, Larry. The Maggid from Dubno was said to have told the following story. All their lives, the two young brothers had lived in the city behind great stone walls, and never had they seen field or meadow. One day, they decided to pay a visit to the country. As they went walking along the road, they saw a farmer busily plowing his field. They became very puzzled. "What in heaven is he doing that for?" they wondered. "He turns up the earth and leaves deep ruts in it. Why should someone take a smooth piece of land covered with nice green grass and dig it up?" Later, they watched the farmer sowing grains of wheat along the furrows. "That man must be crazy," they exclaimed. "He takes good wheat and throws it into the dirt." "I don't like the country," said one of the brothers in disgust. "Only strange people live in the country," he said, and he returned immediately to the city. His brother, who remained for a while in the country, saw the change take place in the fields only a few weeks later. The plowed field began to sprout tender green shoots, even more beautiful than before. This discovery excited him very much, and he quickly wrote to his brother in the city to come at once back to the country to see the wonderful changes. The brother reluctantly left the city, but was pleasantly surprised by what he saw in the fields. As time passed, the two brothers watched the shoots grow into golden heads of wheat. Now they both understood the purpose of the farmer's work. When the wheat became ripe, the farmer brought out his sickle and began to cut it down. The impatient brother couldn't believe his eyes. "That farmer is crazy. How hard he worked all those months to produce this lovely wheat, and now with his own hands he is cutting it down. I am truly disgusted with such an idiot. I'm going back to the city where people are sane." His patient brother held his peace and remained in the country. He watched the farmer bring the harvested wheat to his granary. He saw him skillfully separate the good grains from the chaff. He was filled with wonder when he found that the farmer had harvested 100 times the amount of seed that it seemed that he had sown. The Dubno Maggid concluded, "This brother came to realize that to everything that is successful in this world, there must be a process requiring patience to allow that process to run its course. We too must exercise patience and openness in understanding those elements in our lives which must go through necessary stages before a final product can be arrived at." This would have been a great lesson for the children of Israel to have considered while they were languishing in Egypt following the successes of Joseph. A paranoid Pharaoh, concerned with the potential rebellion by the many, many Israelites should war break out with a neighboring nation, decided to enslave the entire people of Israel. They would be stuck in that terrible state until God finally freed them from Egyptian bondage and granted them independence. Please recall that when Moses first informs the children of Israel that they are soon to be delivered from slavery, they are ecstatic. In fact, the Torah tells us in Shemot, Exodus chapter 4, beginning with verse 29, "Vayelech Moshe ve'Aharon, vayasfu et kol zikne b'nei Yisrael, vaydaber Aharon et kol hadvarim asher diber Adonai el Moshe, vayas ha'otot le'inei ha'am, vaya'amen ha'am, vayishmeu ki fagad Adonai et b'nei Yisrael, v'chira'a et onyam, vayikdu vayishtachavu." Moses and Aaron went and assembled all the elders of the Israelites. Aaron repeated all the words that the Lord had spoken to Moses, and he performed signs in the sight of the people, and the people were convinced. When they heard that the Lord had taken note of the Israelites and that he had seen their plight, they bowed low in homage. Thinking that liberation was imminent, the people were quite enthused, willing to do anything that Moses bade them, and they listened intently to the message of God shared with them by their respected leader Moses and his brother Aaron. But we know that freedom didn't happen right away. In fact, the hardships of the Israelites increased, and the torturous conditions worsened. Doubts began to creep into the minds of the children of Israel, and the confidence that they had in Moses began to wane. Moses was not oblivious to this change in attitude, it must be said. Our Torah portion, Parashat Va'era, records his confession before God, acknowledging the people's lowered morale, which in turn made listening to Moses' directives that much more difficult. In chapter 6 of Shemot, beginning in verse 12, we are told, Vaydaber Moshe lifnei Adonai lemor, Hein b'nei Yisrael lo shamu elai, ve'eich yishma'eni faro, va'ani aral sfataim. Moses appealed to the Lord, saying, The Israelites would not listen to me. How then should Pharaoh heed me? A man of impeded speech. Of course the Israelites found it difficult to hear Moses' words of liberation. They had been subjected to so much abuse and oppression that the sounds of freedom fell on deaf ears. Velo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach umeavodah kasha. They would not listen to Moses, their spirits crushed by cruel bondage. Was it surprising at all that Moshe Rabbeinu, whose every word was sincere and intended for the good of the people, found himself taking this stubborn refusal to listen to the divine message personally? Maybe the people weren't listening to me because of my physical limitations. V'ani aral sfataim, seeing I am of uncircumcised lips, says Moshe. Even a person with great confidence can recoil and lose some of his edge when he feels the emotional message that he is sharing with those whom he loves is not being heard or listened to. As a result of this weakened presentation, the masses then become impatient because they do not see immediate results, nor do they feel that they have strong leadership to show the way. And this unrest causes the messenger to become even more uneasy, suffering from both a feeling of loss of control and an unresponsive community. There have been many attempts over the years to bring a much elusive peace to be shared by the Israelis and the Palestinians. Offers of peace have been put on the table and rejected a number of times over the years. And with each failure of these peace talks, morale has been lowered on all sides. Hope stops springing eternal, and the frustration that ensues leads to added impatience, making the possibility of listening to one another an even more difficult challenge than before. I know that trigger warnings are supposed to be introduced at the beginning of a lecture or a Devar Torah, but let me say to you now that if you are offended by expressions of strong Zionist content, then feel free to turn off this podcast immediately. I cannot tell you that I know the formula for peace or the recipe for bringing about peaceful coexistence between Israel and the Palestinians. I do know that not listening to one another is counterproductive and unhelpful. Maybe using the term two-state solution is no longer helpful to the process because it brings with it so much baggage from the past failures in attempts to reach a long-lasting agreement. Instead, perhaps thinking outside the box, unwedded to previous policies, maybe that will produce a breakthrough. With this in mind, I share with you my feeling that the American declaration that Jerusalem is the capital of Israel is a step in a constructive direction. There is almost complete consensus regarding Jerusalem's place as the capital of Israel as well as its remaining the central focus of the Jewish people, both inside and outside the Jewish state. Simply stated, Jerusalem is the capital of the state of Israel. It was, in my understanding of the outcome of the Six-Day War, reunified by the Israeli Defense Forces as a result of victories in battle with Jordan in June of 1967. Of course, our government must take measures to look after the infrastructure and welfare of all of this Jerusalem that we call our capital. We need to care for its inhabitants, no matter who they are. About this, there is no question. But I believe that the only way that Islam, Christianity, and Judaism will all be able to maintain freedom of religious expression in the holy city of Jerusalem is by keeping it in Jewish hands. This can be confirmed based both on the history of the city prior to 1967, which, while under Jordanian control, left the holy sites bereft of a Jewish presence, as well as if we take seriously the rhetoric of the Palestinian leadership, which continues to deny any connection between the Jews and Jerusalem. In Egypt, at the time of Israel's darkest moments, the people stopped listening to leadership because times were tough, the work was hard, and faith in God was far from a done deal. And yet, in the course of time, and with perseverance on the part of Moses and Aaron, the people finally found their way out of Egypt, survived 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, and eventually built a nation in Eretz Israel. We are not in such dark times in 5778. Israel continues to prosper economically and has succeeded in developing and innovating in so many fields. We set a record for tourism in 2017 with over 3.6 million people coming to visit the Holy Land throughout the year. Employment is way down, consumer confidence is high, and Guatemala has committed to moving its embassy to Jerusalem at the earliest opportunity. In spite of the questionable behavior toward Israel of the UN and many of its organizations, we Israel remains a country with confidence and can continue to plan for a bright future for all of her citizens. Which is all the more reason why we need to open our ears to the cries of those less fortunate than we, living right here in our own backyard. Why we need to open up our eyes to see how important it is that we reach out and provide assistance and support to the many sectors of our society that are currently neglected and at times ignored. What the two brothers discovered when they finally were able to see what happens in the country, we must also acknowledge, namely that it takes time and effort to bring about a desired outcome. We can't expect results instantaneously, and at the same time, we must not give up hope that the work that we put in will find its reward sometime in the future. We need to plow, leaving no stone unturned as we seek solutions to the many diplomatic challenges facing us both locally and internationally. We must plant seeds of peace that can be watered and tended to regularly, nurturing them so that they will produce healthy solutions. And when we harvest and collect the information that will allow us to best see the whole picture, we need to use that material to help create a society that is sustained by our collective hard work and vigilance. Sure, it's easy to become impatient when the desired end result does not arrive right away. We might even stop trying altogether. We might look elsewhere for guidance. We might simply give up because that is so much easier than stepping back, surveying the situation anew, and strategizing imaginatively and confidently. As God was planning with Moses to bring the Israelites out of Egypt, he too was evolving in his relationship with the enslaved nation soon to be freed. First, we are taught that God encouraged Moses to talk to the Israelites about his plan for liberation. In the very beginning of our parasha, Shemot chapter 6, verse 6, we read, Lachain emor li v'nei Yisrael ani Adonai v'hotzeiti etchem mitachat sivlot Mitzrayim v'hitzalti etchem me'avodatam v'ga'alti etchem bizro netuya uvishvatim gedolim. Say, emor, therefore, to the children of Israel, I am the Lord. I will free you from the labors of the Egyptians and deliver you from their bondage. I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and through extraordinary chastisements. Our rabbis teach us that this formulation, Lachain Emor, used rarely in our Tanakh, appears there when there are words shared only in one direction. Lachain Emor, therefore, say something to someone, but do not expect a return response from the listener. This was the first directive given by God as he announces the news that the Israelites will soon leave Egypt on their way to freedom and to Eretz Israel. Surely the people listened, but because they were not completely engaged and they quickly lost interest in the plan that had been presented to them, especially when their circumstances became more difficult and their work became more rigorous, they didn't give a response. A few short verses later in Shemot 6, chapter 6, verse 9, Moses changes the action from unidirectional to a more engaged exchange by replacing that word emor with the word daber, as we read, Vaydaber Moshe kein el b'nei Israel. Moses told this to the children of Israel. Believing that more can be accomplished in the bringing about of freedom to the Israelites if the people themselves are engaged, Moses speaks with the children of Israel, hoping to get them on board. But unfortunately, the people were still skeptical and hesitant, as the verse concludes, Velo shamu el Moshe mikotzer ruach umeavodah kasha. But they would not listen to Moses, their spirits crushed by cruel bondage. As a result of this non-responsiveness by the Israelite nation, God takes the next and final step, which will ensure that the children of Israel will know that their destiny must include the exodus from Egypt. In verse 13 of the same chapter, we read, Vaydaber Adonai el Moshe ve'el Aharon, Vayitzaveim el b'nei Yisrael ve'el Paro melech Mitzrayim, Lehotzi et b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim. So the Lord spoke to both Moses and Aaron in regard to the Israelites and Pharaoh, king of Egypt, Vayitzaveim, commanding them to deliver the Israelites from the land of Egypt. God commanded. He stopped saying. He stopped discussing. He stopped suggesting. He stopped waiting for a response from the people or even from Pharaoh himself. Instead, he took to commanding that the Israelites be allowed to leave Egypt, which, by the way, also didn't happen immediately. There was a process that was necessary for the actual liberation from bondage to take place. The Egyptians had to undergo an ordeal of 10 plagues, and the Israelites needed to prepare themselves and their families as well in order to make the Exodus a reality, leading to them appreciating true freedom. If God had waited for the children of Israel to be completely ready to leave Egypt, there might never have been an Exodus. There had to come a time when God needed to command, Vayitzaveim, leaving no room for resistance or rejection. It was simply time to act. Perhaps this is how one might choose to look at the Trump Declaration confirming Israel's capital as being in Jerusalem. Enough suggesting, enough engaging in dialogue. Make a proclamation and let the chips fall where they may. Who knows? This may be the best way to jumpstart sincere, active, and constructive peace talks. Yeah, it may take some time. It may be initially met with resistance. On the other hand, it may also bear fruit that no one anticipated, just like the results of the wheat harvest and the story of the two brothers who ventured into the countryside. The Israelites ended up leaving Egypt, not so much because they were in complete agreement with God's plan, but because they allowed the faith that they had in him and in his servant Moses to be the most important factor in their attempt accepting liberation. At the same time, the people had to put lamb's blood on their doorposts, pack up, take matzah with them, and undergo concrete steps to leave Egypt when the call came. They could not be passive under any circumstances. Similarly, our commitment to a successful and secure Israel must be reinforced by both our faith in God's commitment to the Jewish people, as well as our unceasing work towards the resolution of conflict in this region of the world. We need to combine faith with action, belief with a commitment to change. Some of us, for example, not only recite Hallel with a blessing on Yom HaAtzma'ut, in Israel's Independence Day, we also insert a special Al HaNisim in our silent Amidah prayers on that day, thanking God for the miracle of Israel's sovereignty, a prayer similar to that which is recited on Purim and Chanukah. And just as our tradition teaches that the miracles of Purim and Chanukah could not have come about had the Jews chosen to be passive, so too would we not have merited the founding of Medinat Israel, the State of Israel, had we relied on God alone. We had to take action to gain independence, and confident action we took then and again in 1967 when we reunified the holy city of Jerusalem. To me, the story told in Parashat Va'era, at least this year, suggests that we must work hard to achieve our goals, that we must have faith that those goals will be reached, and that we have to be prepared to go through a process, including many ups and downs, to realize our dreams. That process may very well take longer than we imagine it will take, but that's no reason to stand down or to give up. Lo alecha hamlacha ligmor, velo ata ben chorin lehibatel mimena. We are not obliged always to complete the tasks to which we are assigned or which we undertake, but neither are we free to end our commitment to those tasks. We must be resolute, but patient, determined, but flexible, visionary, but circumspect. Perhaps through these prisms, there can be a constructive move towards compromise, communication, and eventual mutual agreement for peace and coexistence with our neighbors. Kein yehi ratzon, so may it be God's will. Amen.
Thank you, Rabbi Marcos. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.